Hi everyone. I just want to give a little shout out that Business Barn Raising is now open for the year. This time around, we are really focusing on helping people who have been interested in incorporating hypnotherapy into their practice get started. And the most important things to get started really are focusing on your practice location, getting all the systems in place that you are going to need to provide services. Those are things like insurance and contracts. And finally, finding the clients that you need to run your practice. And in Business Barn Raising, we cover all of these areas, both in lesson content format as well as supported coaching calls. So if you think this is something that might be helpful to you, be sure to reach out and get signed up. We will be starting in June. Alrighty, everyone. I am Gina and welcome to Animals and Aquatics. I am excited today. We have a wonderful special guest today. Miyako Kinoshita is joining us to talk about her work with animals and the students at Green Chimneys. And I'm excited to hear so much about the work that she is doing and what happens and what she sees with the animal interactions and the students there. So if you'll get us started and introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about the work that you do.
Okay. So my name is Miyako Kinoshita, and I currently work at a place called Green Chimneys Children's Services. We are in the outskirts of New York City. And what we do is we are a residential treatment center and a special education school for children who have psychosocial challenges, behavioral challenges. School districts actually send these students to us.
Okay.
So we can give them some coping skills, like self-regulation skills, and hopefully they can get back to their community, their schools, their family, and be successful. So within the organization, so we have a school that has 200 students between first grade and 12th grade. And what makes it very unique is that we have full-blown nature-based programs here. And nature-based programs mean that we have farm animals, we have equine horse program, we have wildlife rehabilitation center, we have two gardens, we have New York State undesignated model forest on our other campus. We have outdoor education programs. And we also have access to the greatest, biggest wetland in our area.
That sounds amazing to have it like all in one place. For us, it's like we go to the stables here and we go to the park here. And so we're getting a little bit of the different pieces, but they're all in different locations. And so it's amazing that the students have that opportunity to have all those supportive services there. And I know as you were introducing, you said it's a psychosocial model. And this semester, I actually teach the psychosocial semester for occupational therapy assistant students. So they're learning, sounds like, a lot of the skills that your students need, the coping skills, the ability to work in a group and learn those social interactions and teamwork skills. So it's great to hear that that model is out there to support students, because I'm seeing a lot of those children in a one-on-one setting, but knowing that there's that educational opportunity for them sounds really amazing. And it sounds like there are a lot of animals that you maybe work with. So can you tell us a little bit more about the animals that are part of this?
Sure. So, and we have a hard time actually counting how many animals actually we have, but we believe we have somewhere around 250 animals. And we also have some dogs, but it's mostly wild animals and farm animals and horses. And what they do is they live with us for their lives, you know, like unless they really struggle in this environment, we have them as companion animals, and students actually pretty much take care of them. So taking care of the animals and learning about animals is a part of their lives here in the school here. And by doing it, they actually learn a lot of skills. You know, like they become confident, they become like more social, and they work with each other, they care about somebody else. So there are lots of benefits in doing part of the treatment and education with animals in like around us.
Yeah. Well, and I love that part that, because I was thinking when you said like over 200 animals, I was like, man, I wouldn't want to have to take care of all of them. But I think that, I mean, I grew up having animals and, you know, that was part of the expectation is if I was going to have animals, I was the one responsible for taking care of them. And it does, it gives you so many of those skills of responsibility and caring for somebody outside yourself and perspective and just a lot of those skills. And so it sounds like that's kind of embedded in the curriculum.
Yeah.
And those interactions. So who's leading the students or how does that vary between like teachers or therapists?
So there are a lot of like many different ways that kids come to the farm. We have a farm department within the agency just because of the animals we take care of. We are seeing the expertise, right? In like giving them that good care. Mm-hmm. And then our farm is divided into the farm animal section where animal caretaker, you know, like it has expertise in like cows, sheep, goats, and then wildlife part, which is primarily injured and permanently non-releasable birds of prey.
Oh, wow.
We have a rehabilitator who take care of them. And then horses are like a totally different kind of like animals. So like there are expertise there. And each of these area has an educator, the teacher. And then, so animal caretaker, teacher, and then another activity provider. And then we have interns in each area. And they all work with students in a different capacity. So the kids come to the farm in like learning about the animals in the educational class setting. But they can also come in a recreational way to just, you know, like hang out with them. They also work with staff and interns one-to-one. And that's where like they really care for the animals. Mm-hmm. And then therapists, in like occupational therapists we have three of them. They all come to the farm in different areas and work with them. And psychotherapists as well.
Yeah. And when the students are just interested in kind of hanging out with the animals, is that part of their school day or is that outside their school day?
So it happens both times and it is very hard to do it in a school, but especially when students, you know, like have a difficult time staying in the classroom, they get upset. Mm-hmm. And like sometimes not taking a break at the farm, taking a break, walking around the animals and seeing them really is therapeutic. So we sometimes can do that.
Yeah. A couple of my clients right now, I'm seeing them due to school refusal. They can't handle the environment. They can't be in the classroom for a long period of time, or they're in that reintegration process of starting to go back to school. So maybe an hour or so. And all of their parents have reported that the time, you know, interacting either with the horses or with the therapy goats that we have is part of that step of helping them get the coping skills and being able to maintain that calmness to be able to go back and be successful in the classroom. So again, that having it on site for students, we see it as an outpatient. But that's a lot harder on the whole family because they have to, you know, bring them to their therapy session and take that. So the OTs that are working with you, tell me a little bit about what that looks like.
Okay. So their occupational therapy room actually is right at the entrance to the farm. So, and since they have students who are not necessarily willing to participate in a lot of, you know, like skill building sessions, and they have a dog in their area, which one of the staff bring in. And Lily is a big part of, you know, like getting the students engaged. Mm-hmm. And they can walk up to the farm and, you know, like start, you know, like really helping us by, you know, like unlocking some of the, you know, like padlocks, so that, you know, like for preparing the food for the animals.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the things we do really address what students need to work on. And the occupational therapist just jump in and just like give us a little guidance how we can help them, but really utilize willingness that students bring. to help somebody else and just kind of roll with it and like not even let them really think that they are doing a therapy session, but they are helping. And like that seems to take a lot of pressure off of the students.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like they are very successful.
It sounds like that tapping into the internal motivation for a lot of your students is an important part of that. And, you know, as you're describing the farm environment, even that setup part, opening gates, setting up feed, the helping out, the being a helper gives them, I think, a role to play where they get to be important. And maybe they're not ready to step into a bigger role of working with the animals yet or not. But it sounds like that being a helper role, I know, can be a good starting place for students that are struggling. Now, with students that are anxious or have a lot of trouble with anxiety, is the process kind of the same for them?
We have an ability to slowly like get to know them and have them participate in, you know, some of the things on their own pace. So and working with animals, you know, like we don't have to catch an animal to start. But you know, like we can do a lot of different things, but especially some of the anxious students and also some of the kids who are hyperactive, they start asking us too, you know, like, I want to carry heavy things. So, like, can I just like push a wheelbarrow today? You know, like, is there anything that I can do that physically make me feel, you know, like good? And those are really amazing moments. I think that, you know, like we have that, you know, students start recognizing, you know, like what they need or what their body feels good about and start asking for those things too.
Yeah, the OT in me hears that heavy work, like they're asking for the heavy work because it's so regulating for them. And so carrying something heavy, pushing a heavy wheelbarrow really regulates those sensory systems, allows them to be more focused, allows them to feel more calm. And so it's great to see them basically self-organizing. When we look at it from a dynamic systems theory or thinking about it from systems, it's like as their systems organize, they're moving towards this place of homeostasis where they're able to pick and choose things that really help them. And do you or the teams, the grown-ups that you work with, do they find it hard ever to follow the kids' lead like that? Because I think sometimes we feel like we're supposed to be doing something, you know, it's like we're supposed to be leading. But when you hear that, the kid come to you and say like, hey, can I push the wheelbarrow? Because they know that's what they need. They're doing it, right? We just need to be the guide. So have you seen that or have you been in that those shoes?
So not just that, our students actually have their own idea of what they do when they come to the farm. And we try to incorporate their ideas and see it as a positive thing instead of a negative thing, right? And then the kids, and I actually supervise a lot of the interns who work with them, and like we talk about negotiating and really, you know, like give one and take one kind of relationship building so that, you know, like they can, like we can give them what they want, but they also start like getting into the relationship piece that, you know, like, oh, he wants something from me or the animals need something from me, and really turn it around and say, like, it's not about me, but it's about animals, it's about somebody else. And I see that kind of working in some ways, like, really beautifully, because in our setting, especially when the students sleep here and go to school, they are in the center of attention all the time. We have social workers, teachers, and like voice counselors. We are always talking about, you know, like, how can we help them? And I think that sometimes it's a very overwhelming, you know, like environment.
Yeah.
And we can actually say, okay, let's focus on the animal and say like what Johnny the sheep needs right now, today. And it kind of allows them to get out of that role. And then care for somebody else. And I think it's really, you know, like in some way, a release that we need for some of the students. So, and I see that it's asked about what I want to do when it starts changing, you know, what can I do? What does somebody else need?
Yeah.
You know, like they are turning it around, but also getting a break from like all about me and what I have to do.
Yeah.
And I can do for somebody else.
Yeah. So you mentioned interns, and I'm sure that's a big part of the school and is kind of helping the next generation of therapists and social workers and educators learn and learn about the unique area of incorporating animals in working with kids. And I say, you know, it's like whenever you put animals and kids together, you just never know what is going to happen.
Yep.
So what do you think, what do you see when you have interns come in as far as areas that they need to either be strong in or key skills they need to have or the common mistakes maybe that you see with new people who are just learning?
So, and when we have interns, you know, they can have different backgrounds, but usually people have more background in human services, but they have background in animals and they want to put both together, but it's really hard to find a person who actually know both of them well. So, and it is always in like the human, you know, like services people come here and it's a lot to learn about animals, the safety, the behavior, because animals in this work, you know, like it need to be really carefully monitored so that they don't get stressed out. Get hurt. And for the animal person, working with humans, especially humans who have some emotional regulation problems, can be very scary. Right? Yeah, like what happens if somebody really have a crisis or they have a meltdown? You know, what do I do? So, and we do a lot of training, but I think one of the challenges that the interns really learn here through all of that is to learn how to be friendly and supportive, but set the boundary enough to be a staff, the provider, and not entirely be friends with the student. They are mostly young people who are just out of college.
Okay.
And that setting the boundary can be a little scary, like building the relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's interesting. Yeah. Especially if they're closer in age, because you say you go all the way up to 12th grade. So, you know, that's an older teenager, 17, 18, maybe even. And then you have somebody who's young and out of college. The age gap isn't huge there. And so being able to feel confident enough to set the boundary, be supportive, like you said, but firm, because I feel like always with the safety aspect of the students and then the animals, there has to be boundaries. There has to be like some things aren't negotiable because of safety. And so you said you have a lot of training for your interns. So does the training piece kind of cover some of those aspects of safety and boundaries for safety?
Yes. So, and all of us who work in our environment have to go through quite a bit of training. And part of it is Cornell University has a training called Therapeutic Crisis Intervention. And like we have to go through that training, and like it takes 3.5 days for us to get through it and get certified. Well, you would learn a lot of that. But and then we really get into the ongoing supervision and, you know, like continuous education on how to be a mentor, right? Like how to be a role model.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think that's really huge. And like that's for anybody. It's so important to, you know, and it's so satisfying to be a successful mentor. And then I see that as a really, you know, like training and a supervision in kind of a, you know, thing.
Well, I think that's one of the things that just can't be replaced in this particular area is that mentorship, because you need somebody who has seen it to help the next, whether that's supervisor to intern or intern to student or older student to new student, maybe even come in. Do you have any almost peer supports like that where the older students who've been there maybe a little longer help some of the new students who are just coming in?
Yes, so we do have a mentoring program that the residential life department does, really in like social services. And it's actually quite amazing. Before COVID, we actually had a mentor and mentee coming to take care of the animals together. You know, and like sometimes like younger students, a little scared or a little fearful of animals, you know, students help. And we do have a student who really didn't want to come to the farm at all, who came with the mentor. And like now, you know, like really has became a part of his life. And we do that. But you know, I think I see some of the older students really thrive And also younger students really craving like that kind of relationship from older students, interns, you know, like and staff even.
I think we see that in when we have volunteers as well in our therapy teams, the clientele that we work with, they're looking for the horse handler maybe who's on the horse show team, who's their peer age-wise and can be a role model and be a bit of a mentor. And they look for that interaction. And it always helps me as a therapist because I'm age-wise so removed. So it can be helpful to ask and include that other person in and be like, oh yeah, what is this like? Or what do you like about school? Or what is challenging in this situation? Because their perspective brings so much to the session that I'm just never going to be able to bring. No matter how friendly or interactive I can be, our relationship is always clinician to client. And having that peer there helps me so much because that gives me something else to bring in. Or sometimes the interaction goes in, like they have a conversation that goes in a little bit of a different direction. And I'm like, okay, that's great. It gives me such insight into what's going on. And the horse for us can play like such a great mediator in that because we can then bring it back around and say like, and how does our horse reacting to that? Or we were just talking yesterday in one of our sessions about the arousal curve and, you know, where, and so I asked the horse handler, I said, well, where do you think the horse is on the arousal curve right now? Because the way I was looking at it, he was very low on the arousal curve. He didn't have a whole lot of energy. And she said, actually, I think he's pretty much in the green zone. Like his ears are forward, he's moving, like he's very comfortable and relaxed. And so she knows him much better than I do. And she goes like what his week has been like, because I'm not seeing him through the whole week. And so then we were able then to say that to the client, oh, that's really interesting. His body language was making us think this, but now that we get a little more information, he's actually a little higher up on the arousal curve. Has that ever happened to you where people look at your body language and think that you're in a different state than you really feel inside? Because that person's body language doesn't always reflect what they feel internally. And so it was a nice opportunity to use some modeling. And I'm sure you guys see that as well. Now, with the horse side of things, is that hippotherapy? Is that equine assisted psychotherapy? Is it a combination? Tell me more.
Okay. Yeah. So, and it really depends on, you know, like who we have here as clinicians, right? Like what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, one of our OTs is a horse person and she owns a horse, but she chose to really focus on the ground walks. Like she does a lot of ground work and come in. Do grooming sessions, like taking care of horses and stuff like that. And therapists and often do that as well. I think in our setting, a little bit of a challenge is that when we start doing mounted session for the horses, and what we have 200 students and like one client, one therapist, one staff would take up the arena, right?
Yeah.
And so on, you know, how many of these private sessions can we do is also a really big question. And then, with, you know, horses especially, looking at the lens of, you know, like, how can we create a session around taking care of the horses? You know, like, doing more and more, you know, like, let's groom him or let's do this for them. And then we do probably most of it that way. Other than, you know, like we need a horse to play a role in our sessions.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me think I'm a interactive vaulting instructor. Okay. And it makes me think of interactive vaulting because you can have a group.
Yeah.
And you can do some ground stuff and then you do your mounted stuff, but it's with a group. And then after, and so they usually get they're a little bit of individual time with the horse as they're doing, getting on and maybe doing some moves on the horse. And then they do their walk around. But then at the end, it's all about taking care of the horse and the team takes care of the horse. You know, it is interesting because you have a bigger number population and the workload with horses is huge. It's like you couldn't do 200 sessions in a week. And I've talked with that with some clinicians who are interested in including hippotherapy in like their practice, but they have a busy outpatient practice. And I said, well, how are you going to look at who is going to have hippotherapy included in their plan of care and who's not? And it sounds like you would have some of those same challenges because of the number of students. That would be a challenge of like, well, who's going to have it included and who's not? And how is that all going to work out? So it sounds like the ground and the caretaking, which with horses, there's always something to do.
Yeah, so it really worked out for us because also like our clinicians, like they have a lot of students in a big caseload sometimes, and then having to have to come and prep and then having to have to debrief, it's a lot of time outside of the actual session that they have to spend. Mm-hmm. And that can be a challenge in that setting too, you know, like doing like hypnotherapy and some other thing.
Yeah, it's never just the block of time that you're with the client. Yeah, the prep work, the after, and even if you have a care team for the animals, there's still a component, I feel like, as a therapist, like responsible, like I still, even though somebody else is charged with doing the task, it's still my ultimately to go and oversee and just make sure, like, did the horse get put away okay? Is everything like done? Do I need to touch base with the horse handler to see if they need anything from me or they have any questions regarding the session? So yeah, timeline.
Yeah, no, and our, and the, you know, like, so like our equine staff and interns, you know, like they always want to learn from the clinician. So they have tons of questions. You're like, did I do something right? You know, like, what do you want more? So you know, like really, you know, like meeting that need from, you know, like the animal, you know, like caretaker and leader side, you know, it takes time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to give you a lot of credit because interactive and bonding is incredible multitasking. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, I have people come here and teach me and like read it and like it, the amount of skills it's required to do that. I give you a lot of credit. Watching kids, like watching the horse, make sure everybody moves, everybody's engaged. It's just an amazing skill that you need.
It definitely requires, yes, multitasking is definitely part of it. Structure. I found like structure. And I think the first time I led a group out, I didn't anticipate the wide open space of the arena and how much of an effect that was going to have on the group. They just got out there and like, it was like they had never seen a big open space before in their entire lives. And they were like, and I was like, oh dear. Okay. We got to plan better for this next week. Because they hadn't had a lot of experiences where they had that freedom. And visually, it was a very open space. And so the next week, we had a better plan in place to start a little bit in a smaller space to do our warm up. And then we were able to move into the bigger space and kind of using the lunging circle to also give us a little bit of a space to be in rather than just the whole arena, which was clearly way too much for at least two kids out of the group to handle. So yeah, and getting a good group, I think, is really important with interactive vaulting because we can accommodate a lot of different levels, but there still has to be some group cohesiveness. And that's one thing that we teach our OTA students is about group dynamics. And I think it's one of the most fun things that I get to watch when we run nature-based groups is the first couple of weeks, everybody's really in that kind of figuring everybody out phase. And then you start to see like the mini conflicts start to come up of, he said this to me, or she's always the leader, or why don't I ever get to do? And it's really, they're starting to figure out like, what is their role in the group? Where do they fit in the group? We make sure we tell parents ahead of time, in this phase, in this kind of stormy phase, your child may say, I don't want to go to group. I don't want to come. So-and-so, like this other kid isn't nice to me. We tell them that's a normal part of group dynamics. If you pull them out, then they never get to the phase of learning how to work with the other kids, of experiencing that successful performance phase of groups. Do you see that as well?
Yes. Yes, we do. And so in our setting, each one of the classrooms usually have 8 or up to 12 students, right? And in some of the program areas, because of the risk, we actually split them in half, that we only have 6 students at a time. but on each one of the teachers, you like utilizing the ability that we're in, but you like also you like we are just learning that part and last week in school in the professional development and active supervisor. Mm-hmm. They really actively, you like it, watch the students, you like it, walk around, make sure that you like they just, you like attend to everybody. They have eyes behind their back, in the back of their head. You like it just has to be.
Mm-hmm.
And our amazing teachers, and they constantly praise, you like it, students. You like it, thank you for doing this. You like it, great job doing this so that everybody gets engaged, involved, and like everybody feels like a part of the group. And the animals in it, you know, to keep the animals safe. You know, like it's a lot of things that they need to manage. But the more they practice, then they more they can do that and like really have a very active, you know, like a group. You know, like that's how I think you know, like it. You have to roll.
Absolutely, it is. You know, and like you said, it with your interns, either coming from the social services background or the animal side of things. It is the melding of the two and being able to have enough animal sense and experience to know what potentially might happen, or even what does Johnny the sheep like or dislike. It's from the giant sheep category all the way down to that single sheep. What is that sheep like?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, then knowing all the students and bringing that piece in. What are our educational opportunities for teachers and clinicians to learn more, to be supported in putting these two things together?
So I, you know, like, I think that it's a really big question. But part of it is time. You know, like if you're a teacher, if you are a clinician, especially in a school, in a residential setting, there are so many fires that you are putting, you know, like out every day,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's so much, there's so much catching up. There's not enough time. So making time to actually physically go to the farm and get to know the animals and try to utilize it can be a challenge, like on its own. And then we try to provide support in a way that everybody feels comfortable enough, like, and work with animals because they're afraid. Sometimes that if something happens, animals get hurt, right?
Yeah.
It's always, like what if, you know, like I can't imagine like having these many kids with the animals and like can't protect them. So and I think knowing the animals, animal behavior is super important, but we also really are getting into this idea of coaching in the moment. You know, like we need to really help people in the moment, troubleshooting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because training and sitting in the lecture is not going to just cut it.
You can only watch so many videos on animal behavior, and it's not the same when it's happening right in front of you.
Right. And I've been here for like 25 years, and like I really learned many animals, you know, like on their own have that instinct. They walk away if they don't like something, right? And it is that, you know, like, if they do, I think we accept that and then work with that with the students and they'll talk about it. Like, maybe he doesn't feel like it today. Sometimes we feel the same way and let it go. You know, like it. So having that animal's choice to walk away and not come in and engage is important in a way, you know, like that. Mm-hmm. That diffuses a lot of the potential crisis if we do that.
Yeah, we saw a great setup. It was at the Arizona Zoo and it was their petting area with their goats. And since we have therapy goats, I was really curious like how they set everything up because this was free interaction. It wasn't structured in any way. And so they did. They had an indoor space that was goat only. And then they had two separate like outdoor little penned off areas that had big signs that said, this is the goat's space. Please don't enter it. And when we were chatting with the keepers as our kids were petting the goats and talking with everyone, I was asking about it. And she said, well, when they've had enough, or if there's a kid that's interacting with them in a way that they don't like, they'll just go in the pen and they've learned that that's their safe space and mm-hmm. they have a place to get away. And so she said, you know, it works really well because they had we have Nigerian dwarfs. So we have little goats and all of ours are pulled. And so we don't have to worry about the horn situation. But they had, because their goats are a combination of rescue goats and things that have been donated to the zoo. And so they have everything, like big size, little size, couple hundred pound goats with horns, goats with no horns. And I was like, it's really interesting mix for people to be coming into. And they said, you know, as long as they have a place to go away and they can de-stress and they know that no little kid is going to follow them in there, that they're really fine with that. I was going to say, because you said now that you said that you've been there for 25 years, how did you get where you are?
So it is a little bit of a long story. I'm going to try to make it short. So I was a big animal lover, but I had dogs and pets, but I never walked these horses. They came into this field from the children side. I walked with refugees from Cambodia before, and I always loved children. And I actually went into the corporate world and did work for a bank for 3.5 years. But during that time, I made money. I went traveling and all over the place. And I had a lot of fun. But then at one point, I decided that if I am going to give my life to something, it has to be meaningful. And for me, what meaningful meant was that maybe someday somebody will say, I changed somebody's life for better. So that became my goal. And then I came here as an intern, really learning animals and animal assisted therapy and education. I thought that I can be here for 4 months and go back and make this happen, right? So that was how naive I was. And as soon as I came here, I said, oh my gosh, I have so much to learn. So I stayed in different capacities and built my own thing in a way. And I still have great mentors and support here. And I still am learning every day. I've never been in a workplace where I get up every day and I'm happy to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
So I just can't get away.
No, it captures you.
Yeah, no, I have a great mix of working with intense young people and developing careers. And I love that. I still love working with students here and there and talking to them. And of course, animals teach us and teach me something different every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a great setting for me.
No 2 days are ever the same, even if you're kind of doing the same tasks. No, mm-hmm. No 2 days are ever the same. I think I enjoy that as well. I like that. It's there's structure and routine within variety. So
yes, absolutely.
What's one of your favorite things about working at Green Chimneys?
I guess there are a few things. I really, truly enjoy working with the interns. I really get into a lot of parts of them. And it's so rewarding for me to teach somebody who is here to learn. They're like sponges and they ask for more. And then looking at how young people who are so afraid to work with students to just become such confident, incredible, mentors, and then they discover a way the next steps they need. That's really rewarding for me. And then the other part really is that I'm picking up some projects with the animals, enrichment, some of the their needs. Mm-hmm. So I pick up some small projects. I work with our camel phoenix. So I take him for a walk, I hang out with him, I just spend time with him, and that relationship that I can have with some of the animals, just really, really incredible.
So camelids, we had worked with alpacas for a while. Are camels?
Yes.
Similar to alpacas, and our alpacas, I would describe them very much like cats, in that if they wanted to interact with you, they were happy to do so. But if they did not want to interact with you, then you're just better off leaving them alone. Now, are camels the same, or because they have, I feel like, a bit more domestication over time, are they a bit more social?
That's a very good question. And as the state, similar species are get related, I can see some parts that are similar to llamas and alpacas. However, there are lots of things that are so different. But I think that what makes the camels a little bit unique is that they're so big and they don't really have a true natural competitors,
mm-hmm.
like the alpacas do, right?
Yeah.
So, and since they are so much bigger than us, our interaction with them is very different in some ways compared to working with, you know, like alpacas or even with horses.
Mm-hmm.
And since they are not very, like, they are very unique species that we don't know.
Yes.
There are lots of things, like, just right there that you might be learn every day, kids learn every day. And having a unique animal that's so foreign also is a really cool thing to have, especially for kids, like, to get very confident and used to the
entire. Yes.
Another challenge. There is a goal. If you want to walk a camel, you know, like, so, and I think, yeah, I think that they're very different to me.
Yeah, they didn't, you know, like, I've worked with a lot of different types of livestock, mm-hmm. and getting the alpacas and just, like, learning about camelids and the way that they react to things. Now, the alpacas, like you said, they are prey animals, and they definitely have that kind of more spooky, they want to be packed up together to feel safe, but they didn't react in the same way as other animals that I was used to working with. And so, yes, I found that really interesting. And it was a learning curve of, like, okay, how are they most comfortable being handled? How can I make them feel or help them to feel safe in this situation? And so it sounds like not only are you experiencing that, but then the students experience that too.
Yeah.
If they're getting more comfortable with kind of our more traditional farm animals.
Yeah. And like, and those, like, camelids, and like, and some of the farm animals too, their relationship with each other is really different from, you know, like, human relationships. We had a student who went to the cattle and looked at the camels, and he called them, right, their names. And they didn't come down to say hello. And he got very, very upset. Like, they don't like, I went and, like, I really wanted them to come and say hello, and they didn't. And a therapist actually had an opportunity to be work with them, because these animals, proximity really defines their relationship, right? They mm-hmm. don't hug, they don't kiss each other. Those are not their normal behavior. So yeah. The fact that they looked up and, like, acknowledged them and then kept eating grass means, well, you accepted the amount of threat. You're like, I can still eat, right?
Yep.
And that's kind of how, you know, they say, like, okay, I feel safe with you. So, and the student really had to learn that and accept that. And then he felt so much better about himself. And, like, his confidence was crushed when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But then he not only learned, regained his confidence, but in it, he learned, you know, like, other people, other animals, they have different expectations.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is really huge in my working with the animals.
Well, and I think it gives good insight into the way that student viewed the world and his interactions with other beings, and then having him learn, they had different needs, they had a different expectation of, like, what it was just to look up and acknowledge you and be like, okay, you're not going to eat me, like, we're good, and helping that student, because it's like, if you go up to a peer group and they're having a conversation and you try to interrupt and they're like, hey, and then they go back to their conversation and you, like, get really upset about it and you're like, well, I'm not going to talk to them anymore. You've just missed a social interaction where it was just a different expectation. Like, they were like, hey, what's up? Like, we're in the middle of talking about something. And when you see those things carried over into the human and peer relations, we have this great opportunity to help students realize, like, oh, there are more different ways, different perspectives. And taking those perspectives to say, oh, well, maybe if the camels did it this way, maybe that's what my friends, maybe my friends aren't, it's not that they don't like me, it's just that they were having a conversation and I needed to wait a moment. So yeah, I love those opportunities. I think it's so much easier when you're pointing it out about an animal to human interaction.
Yep.
Than when it's a human to human interaction. I feel like the kids can hear us better.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And like the other emotional thing that happened is, you know, like when animals are eating, we really respect that and we try not to interrupt them, because as humans, we do and our kids have a lot of issues around food, right? The trigger. So,
yep.
Yeah. No, so and if we talk about that kind of stuff too, like when somebody's eating, you don't really interrupt. Yep. You might wait until they finish.
Yeah.
Because we don't really like that done to us.
As a parent, I know all about that right now.
Right?
I feel that.
Yep.
Stop your heat. So as we get ready to wrap up today, what is something that you wish you had more of professionally?
Wow, that is a good question. It's not for me, but I wish that children who are in schools have opportunities to receive what our children receive. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I always feel really sadly that kids in public schools, if they are doing well, if they are functioning well, they really hardly ever get this kind of opportunity.
Yeah.
But it's so therapeutic. It's so educational. It's so incredibly important that they do this. And I hope that somewhere in that future, I do think that these opportunities gotten so much smaller with the school budgets and some of the issues, that schools don't take field trips anymore. They don't really have a lot of things that they do outside of the core curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do think that enrichment in some of the social emotional learning, these kind of things should be offered to more kids and they should access to that.
Yeah. See, mobile program to go, right? So that way more kids can have the opportunities. Yeah, I definitely. And I think even looking among my own caseload, I think some of those kids could have remained successful in school and not gotten to the place that they were where they got to school refusal if there had been some opportunities for school supports like that, because the animals bring so much to them. And it would have just been a break. Even school gardens and things like that show so much opportunity, both from learning from an academic perspective, as well as from a regulation and co-regulation perspective. So yeah, it would be nice to see a lot more of that available for all kids.
Yeah, even if it's just some wind chimes and swings outside, something to feel the wind, smell, the rain of flowers, the birds, those are the things I think that are very important, at least for me to regulate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one fun fact about you to wrap up, what would you like our listeners to take away?
Okay. So one fun thing about me. So I grew up in Japan. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's really embedded in me that animals to me goes beyond the mammals and the birds. I think that the life of an insect, life of a fish, those things really matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a very conflicting and things happen to me all the time. I get when you're gardening some of the pests, And we feed them wolves to some of the animals, right? Chickens like wolves.
Mm-hmm.
I have certain conflicting thoughts about those things. And it's been a challenge to really navigate through that and myself. And I still enjoy it. I love some of the insects. And I feel that's very unique, especially in this country. So what do you consider animals?
Yeah. So yeah. We're not going to catch you smushing the spiders with your slipper.
No, you don't. You don't. Oh, I have to say sorry. Every time I sweat a fly,
Yes. My one exception to that is ticks. I have no love for ticks, but other than that, yes, we're spider scoopers here too. So we try to get them back outside, and that's a fun one to definitely think about of all the way down to the littlest critter. Up to the biggest.
So a lot of kids like fishing, right? Fishing
mm-hmm.
is a big sport. But fishing also is a very tricky one too, because a lot of times fish get caught. So like, how do you do that? And like, how do you like really cherish that tradition, you know, like, and you know, the joy of going fishing with your father while you're like really making sure that, you know, like we are not harming something just for the, you know, fun of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we had done a little bit of my husband. He is a certified occupational therapy assistant, and he was running a dad's group for a Tenkara fly fishing. And the, just the components of it, of the mindfulness and the ability to maintain attention and focus and look at the water and being able to have that experience. And then there's a bunch of kind of motor skill components, whether it's the fine motor of tying the flies and stuff. So as an OT intervention, he really liked it. He found it very stress relieving. And he said it was a good way to connect with dads who maybe weren't going to be engaged in their kids' therapy session in the same way that a mom would be. Mm-hmm. And he had that same experience of like, it's not really about catching the fish. It's about the whole experience of being there and being in the water and learning all the components. But yeah, the catch and release part, and how do we show honor the fish if we do catch them, and what's that experience like for the client and the family and the whole component of that. So I think that brings an important part to the discussion of just honoring any of the animals that we're working with, whether they're our farm animals or whether they're the worms in the garden, and how do we bring it all in when nature just isn't what's at the farm. Is there anything else you would like our listeners to know?
So I just wanted to do one promotion.
Absolutely. We want to hear it.
Excellent. So, and we have a human-animal interaction conference that's coming up in Brisbane, New York in a few weeks, in like on April 28th and 29th. And this year, we are expecting about 200 people to join, and the theme is animals in this world. So we are working at animal welfare and really focusing on, in like, different animals, how we work with them, ethics, some of the things like this, like of an animal we were to talk about.
Yep.
So if you guys still are able to, please check our website, and it's www.greenteamies.org, and just join. Some of the sessions might be recorded,
okay,
but a lot of them will be hands-on outside experience.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Now, I was hoping you were going to bring that up, because it sounds like such a great learning opportunity, whether you can make it in person and do the hands-on stuff, which is amazing, and to be able to see the animals there. But then if there's going to be some recordings, I think that's a great opportunity for anybody who can't maybe make it in person, especially since we're within a couple weeks. But that's an amazing opportunity. And you said you're expecting about 200 attendees. That's great. That's a really good group. And who is it open to as far as who can attend?
So anybody can attend, but we expect educators, animal handler, animal specialist, and therapist.
Okay.
So, and we are doing this with the University of Denver, Graduate School of Social Work. So that's what we are doing. And yes, we would love to, have you guys come and join.
Perfect. Absolutely. Well, I will make sure to get all of the links from you, so that way we can include them in the show notes, so that way people can click right on the link and get the information and everything about the conference as well.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for talking with us today. And it was so good to connect and hear and learn so much. So thank you for your time.
Well, thank you so much.